Welcome to the Sharp Angles Props and DFS Show. I am your host, Todd Burrows. My normal partner, Ryan McChrystal, is like I was last week under the weather. So we are going to preview a new show that we're going to do for the rest of the way out with Adam Wilde rejoining us. Adam worked with Ryan and I over Thanksgiving. The show went really well, and we thought that format would work excellently in the playoffs. And sitting in for Ryan once again this week, he pinch hit for me last week. This week, he pinch hits for Ryan, Raymond Summerlin. But during the playoffs, it should be Ryan, myself, and Adam. And we will go game by game where Ryan will give you props and Adam and I will give you the best plays that we're thinking about for daily fantasy. We are also going to have a show on Monday where I am working with Curtis Hirsch, and we'll go into that more later. So a lot to look forward to. And since there is so much early information, we're going to do Ryan's props. And instead of doing the normal DFS format that we do, we are going to go over articles that Ray and Curtis wrote about what teams have things to play for and what players have incentives they want to hit, as this, we feel, is the best way that we can help prepare you for early week 18 DFS. And speaking of articles on the Sharp Football site, we want to help you to gear up for the postseason. Our weekly postseason packages are available, and included in those package is the rest of this NFL season, meaning this week. Last week, if you had joined, you would have also gotten our College Bowl recommendations, where we went 8-0-1. So if you sign up for the weekly package, you get this week for free. You also get 71% off. We've gone 56-23 on our elevated plays since November 1st, which is a 71% success rate. And now we're going to pass on that savings to you. Go to sharpfootball.com to learn more and use the code GET71 to take advantage of this tremendous deal. Also, if you could please subscribe and give the thumbs up on our YouTube channel if you are watching or if you listen to us wherever you follow podcasts, please give us a like and a follow and a top review. We would greatly appreciate it. Well, after that, guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I was just thinking about it now that you mentioned that I was on this episode last week too, is that I think this is five podcast episodes in a row in the feed that I'm on. So I apologize to all of our podcast listeners for the terrible things you've heard over the last five. I think I'm going to be on the next one too. I promise to not show up on the Monday one. I promise that Monday one will just be Todd and Curtis. There will only be smart people on the Monday podcast. I promise not to be there.
Well, false humility is worn very well. And
it's not false.
Just not by me. Just not by me. So, Adam, how are you? It's been nice to see you. You sent the document, and of course, when I tried to open it, I was not able to. So,
no need. You figured it out. You got it unlocked.
We're here.
Oh, yep. Got it.
We're ready to go.
Yep. I my computer decided to get COVID. Spaz out right before the episode.
Old so star.
It's all good. It's all good. So we missed Ryan, but his props are here. Ray, I'm going to go to you because I know you huddled with Ryan in the secret enclave in the depths of the bowels of the Sharp Football website to cover and get the good information that we need. The first prop of the week is the CJ Stroud completions over. What's Ryan's thoughts?
Yeah, and we already have a line on this one. It's 21.5, which is actually below where Ryan was kind of thinking it would end up. He thought it'd be closer to 23.5. So getting it at 21.5 is a value here on CJ Stroud. And there are lots of reasons to like CJ Stroud this week. There are lots of reasons to like this entire Texans passing attack this week. against the Colts in a game that, you know, is a win and end game. So we know the motivations for the Texans. We know the motivations for the Colts. We should see both teams push in this game. And the reason this sets up so well for CJ Stroud, there are lots of reasons. The Colts don't generate a lot of pressure, and Stroud is dominant when you keep him clean. The Colts play a lot of cover three. CJ Stroud is dominant against cover three. The Colts play zone without a blitz on 74% of their defensive snaps, which is the highest in the league. And Stroud has completed 68.5% of his passes against zone without a blitz in his rookie season. If you just sit back and play passively against CJ Stroud, he has proven that he can carve up your defense. He did it, even though they lost that game, he did it to them early, way earlier in the season. I think this version of CJ Stroud is better. The other aspect is that, you know, the Titans didn't push the Texans at all last week. And so there was some box score disappointment with Stroud and Nico Collins if you played them in your fantasy championship or if you played them in DFS. But the numbers, the kind of efficiency numbers were there. They just weren't pushed. I think you're going to expect them to get pushed in this game. And even though they weren't pushed last week, CJ Stroud still topped 21.5 completion. So I think there's a lot of things pushing towards, you know, Stroud and Collins. They're both going to be popular in DFS, so I'm not going to say like they're exceedingly great plays, especially on a two-game slate. But there are a lot of things pushing towards both of those guys having really good games in this one.
Yeah, I would agree. Any thoughts on that, Adam?
No, not so much on CJ Stroud, except for the fact that he's probably going to be pretty popular on that slate. So he might be somebody that we have to get away from, but sometimes you just have to deal with the chalk on slates like that. So that's something that we'll have to look into a little bit closer. But if you have a stack, like, for example, CJ Stroud and Nico Collins that projects incredibly well at a reasonable value, don't be afraid to play them on short slates and then just have to get contrarian elsewhere, throw a 5% play in there somewhere later in the lineup, because you need guys. You're not going to have that many guys that hit, so you need those guys. And if CJ Stroud, Nico Collins are those guys, then you have to throw Devin Singletary too, who we're actually going to talk about needs some incentive. So they might be the guys you need too.
Yeah. Fading the best plays is not always a good strategy. Yeah. I would say that's fair to say. Right.
And I think the point you have there about a short slate is points are so valuable on a short slate, right? Obviously, the goal of DFS is just to score the most points. But on a shorter slate, you're going to have fewer points. So each point is worth more, right? And so if you can get these plays and if you can get contrarian, I know we weren't going to talk about the Saturday slate, but if you can get contrarian, maybe you play both Steelers running backs, right?
Sure.
You play both Harris and Warren, and that's not going to be particularly popular. There are ways, and both of them are going to project fine because of how we would expect the Steelers to play against a Baltimore team that's not going to have any starters. And so there are ways you can get around that, because you're right, they're going to be like super, super high rostered. And so you need to get around that some way. But if they're just the best plays, they're just the best plays, and it is what it is.
Yeah. And to be honest, on most slates, actually last Saturday slate, this wasn't the case, but most slates, if you don't have the top scoring quarterback, you're probably not cashing, because the top scoring quarterback is also usually the one that's a good 25 to 30%. I know I was locked in on Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes on a short slate. It was an afternoon slate I played last weekend. And then I forget which backups were playing. I think Jake Browning was definitely one of them. He outscored those guys outright. So then that's the flip side. If you can get one of the cheaper guys to outscore your CJ Strouds, obviously that's fantastic, but the likelihood of that happening is so small. So on those short slates, I usually do just ride with the best quarterback option. I'll stack him with who I need to stack him with. And then just like you said, on showdown slate, I'm always trying to break rules, optimizer rules. People are always clicking on do not pair two running backs from the same team. If that can work, especially on short slates, I play Jalen Warren and Najee Harris together on pretty much every single showdown slate, just because I know that that's a rule that people are going to click as soon as they open their optimizer. And that means that that's less lineups that I have to compete with at the top if I manage to hit.
Yeah. Or you could just play Charlie Kohler.
Sure.
Yes.
Have fun.
That's the way forward.
I'm joking, of course, but all good strategy, folks. I just thought that Charlie Kohler is a pretty good player. I don't think he'll go too under the radar. I don't play Showdown because I barely have enough time to focus on the main slate. But maybe Adam and I will do something together next year to where he actually teaches me to not completely lose every time he plays Showdown.
I would love to.
Yep. And speaking of things we love, to keep the show going, the next prop is the Jordan Love over. Ray.
Yeah, Jordan Love. I haven't been able to find a line on this yet. Ryan liked it at 23.5 or lower. I'm interested to see if we start to see this line creep up. This prop is actually, the over on this prop is 9-1 over Jordan Love's last 10 games. And what's happened is, and I'm sure Ryan has talked about it on this episode a lot, so I don't need to go into it a ton, but the Packers changed their offense. They changed the way their passing offense worked. They moved into more of a quick hitting passing attack. As a result, Love's efficiency has skyrocketed. And as a result, this prop just continues to go over every single week, no matter what it's set at. It continues to go over, like I said, 9-1 over the last 10 games. The other part of this particular game, if we're talking about Jordan Love and his completions, is that the Bears have a very good run defense, a legit run defense. And so if you are trying to figure out how to attack this team, then it makes more sense to have some short targets to Jaden Reed, assuming he plays. He had that injury, but he's been practicing on a limited basis, and kind of the shorter areas and letting him create. That makes a little more sense than running straight into the teeth of this defense. It seems like they won't have AJ Dillon, so maybe that's going to lead to a little more passing. So there are lots of things, again, pointing to Jordan Love going over. If we get this one, although we're going to talk about Gibbs in a second, and they have started to stop. Well, I don't know how to say this. They've started to stop. There you go. That's a good one. Right. It was really good. Excellent. It was a really good way to explain this. They have begun to not put up lines that have been very favorable in one way or the other. We saw that with Jahmyr Gibbs last week. And so I am interested if we're even going to see this Jordan Love prop. But if we do, I'm going to like the over.
Yeah, and just to be clear, because I didn't mention it the first time, we were talking about the Jordan Love over on his completions for those who are following us on the radio. Speaking of starting to stop, that's what no one ever said to me on a podcast.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm really, the Vyvanse is wearing off. The ADHD is coming full circle. If you're watching this on YouTube, which you should do that, go to YouTube, search Warren Sharp, find our channel, click subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, you're just going to see me rocking and moving and doing all of those things as my brain tries to compensate for the lack of ADHD medication. So this could be fun, Todd. We could be into it.
So, okay, there's a lot we could go into there. I probably could take the rest of the episode, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, let's do it. You want to just do therapy session with Ray? I'm into that.
You are getting very sleepy.
Gets expensive.
yes. So now we'll get into some Gibbs and take. Mostly sure. Gibbs, because as quite often, Ryan likes the over on Jahmyr Gibbs rushing. But Ray, as someone who has just started to get into this slate a little bit, are you worried about this one due to the fact that the Lions aren't really playing for that much?
So, yeah. So he likes the longest rush over for Jahmyr Gibbs. We've been playing this for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and the longest rush for Jahmyr Gibbs hits over and over and over again. But like I mentioned, there wasn't a line on it last week. There might not be a line on it this week. I think there are two things. I think your point about the Lions is important. Dan Campbell has said, and he's come out, and Dan Campbell's the kind of guy that doesn't use a ton of coach speak, and so I tend to believe him. But Dan Campbell has come out and said that they're going to play their starters in this game, and so it's possible that's just what we see. We just see Jared Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Gibbs and Montgomery throughout the whole thing. But the Lions don't really have a ton of incentive They could possibly move up to the number two seed, but that would require the Cowboys and Eagles to lose. Both of them are favorites. There's a very small chance they move up to the number two seed. And I wonder if the number two seed for the Lions is important because they would get to maybe play at home in the second round. So maybe it's important. But yeah, there's not a ton of advantage here. So I do worry somewhat that we'll get to halftime, they'll look at the scores, they'll see that the Cowboys are up by 20 on the Commanders, and we could see some of these guys sit in the second half. That is definitely a concern, but also that's going to keep down the roster percentage for someone like Amon-Ra St. Brown. So just things to think about as we move on. For Gibbs specifically, the other thing that you don't like about this is that the Vikings do not allow a ton of long runs. They are the best defense in the league in preventing runs of 15 or more yards. And so you'd go, well, I don't know about Gibbs. The problem is that Gibbs hit his over in this exact prop playing the Vikings just a couple weeks ago. He hits it all the time. He's had a run of 20 or more yards in 7 of his last 10 games. He always hits a big one. And if this line is available, I just think at this point, we're blindly betting it until we get a reason not to.
Yeah. Yeah, and that reason would be if it's announced before the game that they changed their mind and he's not playing. By then, you know, so it might be one, you know. But again, I agree. If Dan Campbell said they're going to play, I mean, Dan, you know, he's the bite the kneecap guy. You know, it's hard to imagine him saying they're going to play and then them not.
He went from the 7 to prove a point. He's going to play the last game to prove a point. I'm fairly certain of that.
Yeah, he should have proven a point and not gone for that 2-point conversion after the penalty. I mean that's when you know everyone talks about his big balls. That's when your balls get in the way of your brain, as any man over a certain age knows at one point or another. All right, let's go to the...
God, you were going at me about Vyvanse, and now this is what we're talking about?
Well, I mean, it's Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell brings out the animal in all of us.
Fair enough.
So, no, but I did have to mention, I mean, that was one of the dumbest things. And I like Dan Campbell, and I think he's done a wonderful job with the team. I like being aggressive, but at the same time, you also have to know when to be smart. And kicking that extra point there would have given them a chance to be the one seed. So that was when good ideas go a bit too far, in my opinion.
And the first play was genius, in my opinion. I mean, having Skipper declare eligible multiple times earlier in the game and then almost basically pretend to be eligible, and then having two players off the ball, but one of them looked like he was closer to the line of scrimmage. Like, that was next level preparation. And then you go from one of the most awesome plays of the year that 92% of your fans aren't going to understand to going for it on the 7 with such heavy playoff implications. That is one of the most insane turnarounds, I think, in 2 minutes of football I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost as quick as Devin Achane out of the backfield. And speaking of Devin Achane out of the backfield,
here we go.
He is Ryan's last prop of the week, and it's his receptions over.
Yeah, and there's no line on this yet either because of the injury uncertainty with Raheem Mostert. I actually think Raheem Mostert being active would be good for Achane because it would keep this line down. And I still imagine we're going to see a lot of him regardless. Actually, we can talk about this later. The Dolphins are one of those kind of under the radar, what happens if they're losing in the second half kind of team? Are we going to see everybody? Are we going to see Tua for the whole game? So lots of questions about them. But the reason why you like Achane, even if Mostert plays or if Mostert doesn't play, the reason why you like his reception total is the Bills play a ton of too high against the Dolphins. Against the Tua Dolphins, they have played a lot of too high. They played one of the most too high. That's right. And Tua doesn't like it. So that's why they can.
Of course not.
That's why they. There you go.
Why would he? No one likes being too high.
It's never worked out well for me. There's a story about a houseboat on a canal in Amsterdam that we can get into later that did not end well for me. But Against this coverage, the Dolphins do tend to target their running backs more, and we've seen that against too high coverage, they have targeted running backs 15.6% of the time. Against single high, it's been 9.7% of the time. Both of these backs had three catches against the Bills early in the season, and so they're kind of schematic reasons pointing you towards Achane here. And then you also just have the worry, Raheem Mostert is injured. He might not even play. If he does play, he might be limited. We might see more of Achane than we normally would. And so there are some reasons kind of pointing us to this over.
Yeah. I love Dave. Ryan has really found a nice niche this year with these overs. Kudos to Ryan. We hope Ryan, if you're listening, that you feel better. And we're looking forward to seeing you back next week. I did a prop. I am up four right now. And I had, made a joke that, I'm not a prop guy. I really don't even look at this stuff. But for fun, every week I did it. And I got out to a nice start, ended up falling back to even. And I'm on a four-game win streak. So I figured I'm going to throw one out. And mine is the under on Michael Pittman's receptions at 7. Now, I like Michael Pittman. I think he's a great receiver. It's a game that they need. But 7 is a lot of receptions. I mean, there are NFL wide receivers who don't, number one wide receivers who don't always get 7 targets. So I looked at the two Saturday games. That was my favorite prop. Adam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't mind the I think that game could get to be a little bit of a shootout, and that could throw a little bit of water on your flame there. But 7 is a lot. When you sent the sheet over and I saw that, I did give it a double take. I hope Vegas isn't setting you up, because I do think that game could hit the over. And if it hits the over, Michael Pittman is going to have to be heavily involved. But 7,
Minshew has one of his Minshew games where, he's inaccurate or throwing interceptions. So, yeah, it was just a natural reaction at seeing a number that high. Ray, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't want to continue to throw the cold water. I kind of like the over. You kind of like the over.
Okay.
Just because it's such a high number, and, there are questions about kind of his health, really. I mean, we didn't see that same usage we wanted last week. And so, are we going to get the Michael Pittman from the middle of the season when he was just stacking targets, getting 12 and 13 targets? Like, is that what we're going to see in this game? Maybe. So it's interesting to kind of think about Michael Pittman. If you're playing that Saturday slate, to think about Michael Pittman, he doesn't have a massive ceiling. He's only hit, Rich actually told me this today, he's only hit 25 point PPR points once this season, which is shocking given the type of player he is, but he's not used down the field. And so, like, maybe if we're talking yards, something like that, I'd feel better about it. But catches, there's always just a chance that he just catches 9 passes on 13 targets for 83 yards, and that's kind of where we are. So I don't know. I would waver on that one for sure.
All right, fair enough. I'm gonna stick with it, and might not be too smart. So let's go over the two articles that were written this week. We'll start off with the teams that are likely and not likely gonna rest. So the likely rest teams are the Ravens, the Browns, the 49ers, the Chiefs, and the Rams. We still have possible rest for Lions and Eagles. The teams that have to play: Colts, Jaguars, Vikings, Saints, Bucks, Cowboys, Packers, and Seahawks. And then there's games with nothing to play for: the Bengals, Browns, Patriots, Jets, Raiders, Broncos, Chargers, Chiefs, and 49ers, Rams. Now, Adam, a lot of those games where, you might think, oh, well, those teams have nothing to play for. A lot of those teams have had nothing to play for multiple weeks.
Yeah.
So I think you really do have to kind of disseminate a little bit more than just those categories. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I'm an incentive week Scrooge. I cannot stand incentive week. I actually think incentive week is awesome because I do think that it overinflates some roster percentages that don't necessarily need to be overinflated. And then I find that you can actually just kind of play the slate straight up and you end up just getting lower roster percentages on guys that you liked anyways. But there is a couple of things to, for one, the rest, you just treat rest like injury, right? I mean, you just pretend all these players are injured. So, I mean, if you want me to get into my play for the best rest play, I think, and someone who's not being projected highly yet because there's still some uncertainty is Cedric Tillman. But that seems, it seems too obvious for me to not even project. For one, the team already announced that they were going to rest. Two, Elijah Moore seemed to have had a seizure on the field. That I felt so bad for him last week. That was terrible. I don't know why they would try to rush Elijah Moore back. But then also, Amari Cooper was injured last week. Joe Flacco is not playing this week. Why would Amari Cooper play as well? So a lot of sites aren't projecting Cedric Tillman to be the primary receiver, which is good, actually, because the longer it takes for them to project Cedric Tillman to be the primary receiver, the lower his roster percentage is going to be. But with either Elijah Moore or Amari Cooper out, he's going to play over 90% of the snaps. He played 95 last week. Ever since Cedric Tillman returned from injury, he's played like over 70% of the snaps except for 1 week. And he's actually good at football, so that tends to help. So I think Cedric Tillman is like the prototypical incentive week play. And it seems like he's going to come in a pretty low roster percentage as well.
I love that. I was on him and Jalen Hyatt coming out of Tennessee.
Yeah.
Hyatt has kind of gotten surprisingly up and down usage on a team, mm-hmm. you know, because he has flashed when he's been on the field. And yet Brian Daboll, for some reason, as a disgruntled Giant fan, you know, that's the kind of guy you want to see on the field every play. And, you know, we just haven't seen it. But Tillman is a good player. My only pushback on that is that the other quarterbacks on the Browns aren't very good at throwing the football. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
Jeff Driscoll, that's what we're getting.
But at the same time, we've seen how the lead and best wide receiver on a team playing a whole game can still catch, you know, 5 for 70. And if you yeah. fall into the end zone, you know, at his salary, it's a great play. I love that call.
Yeah, value is like 7 points for Cedric Tillman, and he can easily hit higher than that. I mean, 15 points would be pretty easily in his realm of possibilities.
Yeah.
There's another Browns wide receiver. There's David Bell. Especially if Elijah Moore sits. We saw David Bell last week end up with something like 3 targets, something like that.
Yeah.
And if you're really worried about the quarterback play, which like Todd said, you should be very worried mm-hmm. about the quarterback play, then the Bell as being more around the line of scrimmage, more quick hitting, you would like his archetype of wide receiver maybe a little bit more, especially if you're playing on DraftKings. And that would be my one pushback on Tillman. I guess my other pushback on Tillman is I've tried to play him several times just to be sneaky, and it hasn't worked out yet for me. Yeah. So maybe I'm just a little gun shy on Tillman.
I thought about Bell and Marquise Goodwin should be active as yeah. well. And I thought about both of them, but Bell has just never worked out for me. I mean, I've played him at min price on Showdown That's so many true. Times, and he's just I don't understand. I was interested in him coming out. He got drafted higher than he should have, which always sends a little red flag, like maybe you missed something, and Bell has not been productive. Cedric Tillman has performed in the way that you would like to see a wide receiver one at times. And that's kind of how I arrived on the pick. But you're right, there is 3 viable options. Unfortunately, they're getting passes from Jeff Driscoll. That's why I kind of tried to pick, okay, which one's the prototypical yeah, one that actually looks good at football. And that's how I arrived on Tillman over the bunch.
Yeah.
All right.
Fair. So 100% fair. Yeah.
Let's go over some of the most important players who have incentives to reach. And then I'm going to get a quick thought on each one of these guys. Once we get into the DFS, well, I'll make sure to go over it again when we get into the DFS section. So for now, Baker Mayfield has a bunch of them, but important for him that they make the playoffs. DeAndre Hopkins needs 7 catches, 39 yards, and 2 touchdowns. to reach his. Odell Beckham has some incentives that are reachable. Jordan Love has a playoff bonus, but obviously you're going to try and make the playoffs. Devin Singletary needs 165 yards. Austin Eckler needs 115 total yards. Alexander Mattison needs 91 rushing yards. And Schultz, the tight end of the Texans, needs 6 catches. So you can see our article for that on the link and get all of that. So let's move over to the DFS slate on Sunday and focus on that a little bit. Let's go over some of the early ownership and compare it to the games that are in. But even more than normal, make sure you do your research this week. But for me, one of the most overriding factors that I'm going to consider is that there is so much value to be had. So look at the expensive players and maybe find some of them that are lower owned. All right. And I told you earlier about the fantasy preview show with Curtis Hirsch. He and I will be announcing what time that is. Make sure to check it out. We're going to go over Curtis's article, which will include how to dominate some of the postseason contests, like the FFPC playoff contest. And we will also have rankings. So I am looking forward to working with Curtis, who I worked with last year on the Waiver Show Weekly. And Curtis is a stellar dude and a very smart dude as well. All right. And again, don't forget about the 71% discount on the Sharp Playoff Package. Sign up for that and profit. All right. So at quarterback, it's pretty spread out. Right now, the three people who have the most ownership are Mullins, Geno Smith, and Dak Prescott. Ray, I'll go to you first. Any thoughts on Dak this week?
Yeah, I mean, the case for Dak Prescott is pretty straightforward. It makes sense why he would be popular. The Cowboys need to win to keep the number two seed, or likely need to win. I guess there are some scenarios. This Washington defense is a travesty. It's a train wreck. And I think Rich Rebar made a really good point about the Cowboys, that unlike other situations this week that we would be worried about, maybe some of the starters sitting out the second half, the fourth quarter, if the Cowboys starters are sitting out, that means they've put up a lot of points already. And Dak Prescott is likely to be a main factor in them putting up points against this Washington defense. And so I think you're going to be less worried about him than you would be about, you know, Jalen Hurts, who's also in a really good matchup, also in a game the Eagles need to win. But if the Eagles go into halftime and they see that the Cowboys are up 35-7 on the Commanders, how much are they really going to push, you know, Hurts and AJ Brown and DeAndre Swift? Devontae Smith's not even going to play, you know, that how much do they really, really push? And so I think that adds a lot of weight to Dak, not just the matchup, not just that they need to win, but if he is ultimately pulled from this game early, it's probably because he's already thrown for 3 touchdowns. And that really gives you a lot more faith in kind of this spot.
Adam, is there anyone that jumps out to you as interesting? For me, I really feel like Justin Fields. You know, I talked about spending your money on a high price guy that's not showing ownership. To me, Fields, this is his last game in Chicago. I think he's going to really want to have a good game. It's a game that Chicago is going to be motivated to win for that reason. Green Bay needs the game. I like Justin Fields. Your thoughts on Fields and anybody else that you like at the quarterback position right now?
Todd, it's going to be you and I versus Mother Nature, because I really like Jordan Love. And I think that the roster percentage is staying really low on all of these Packers because everybody's afraid to play any games in Green Bay or Chicago, for that matter, at this time of the year. But if weather is even halfway decent, yeah, I think that Justin Fields can push the pace just enough, especially with his connection with DJ Moore recently. They've been able to put up points. And frankly, in defense of Justin Fields, who, as you say, may be on his way out. I think he might stay because Eberflus is staying, but nonetheless, he's had a tough crack at it. And he's actually played pretty well when he's been healthy, so he could definitely push this game. I think for Green Bay, I like Jordan Love because I like so many of his options. Tucker Kraft is pretty cheap, but he falls right there in a range where he's not min price and he's not one of the premier options. So he's going to go pretty overlooked. But then Jaden Reed, I've been playing Jaden Reed a lot in Showdown, and he's paid off. I mean, he paid off more often when he was cheaper and less rostered at captain, but even still, he's just been a breath of fresh air for them since they've been without Christian Watson so often and then getting inconsistent play even when he is active. So Aaron Jones is another guy that I'll talk about later. So he has so many options, receiving options, that make him viable in a game that he has to win. So it's if you're going to be a incentive week person, then you should love Jordan Love, because what better incentive than needing to win to make it into the playoffs?
Yeah, I'll throw out, you know, there is a lot of lower priced backup quarterbacks playing this week, Ray. And I'm going to ask you for one you like, but first I'm going to give you one that I like. You know, I like Jake Browning. You know, we're going to see the Browns rest their defense most likely. And we've seen Jake Browning play and score a lot of fantasy points. Jamar Chase is, and looks like he's going to play. And again, as always, give me that guy with the rushing floor who's not going to kill you if he doesn't win you a GPP. But if the passing comes in, Jake Browning to me at lower ownership out of the backups is my favorite, even more than Nick Mullen, who is back starting and is getting the ownership. Your thoughts on Browning, and do you have any of the bums, I mean backups, that you are interested in?
On Browning, I think the Chase part of it is very interesting. I came into the week just assuming we weren't going to see him. He has this shoulder injury. Why is he going to play in this game? It doesn't make a lot of sense. But then we see him, what, limited practice on Wednesday. T. Higgins isn't going to play. Are we going to see a lot of Chase? Then people aren't going to want to pay up for that because of the injury situation. Because, I mean, when you look at DraftKings or you look at the Browns defense, it's going to have a big red number next to Jamar Chase's name, but that's not the defense that he's playing. And so I think that those are all fair points about Browning. And yeah, it makes sense on him. The one thing I'll say, Adam brought up the weather in, you know, Green Bay, maybe people being worried about it. And I think people do kind of get worried about it. It's just going to be cold in Green Bay. There are much bigger weather concerns on the East Coast. One of those games is actually that Cincinnati and Browns game from a win perspective. I mean, nobody's going to be playing anybody, I hope at least, from the Patriots and Jets game, but that could have a lot of wind. And wind is just way more important when we're thinking about fantasy than anything else. So I think that's a good shout by you, Adam, and kind of paying attention to the weather this week and kind of where it is. As for a backup quarterback, why can't we just play Tyrod Taylor again?
Yeah.
Tyrod Taylor's price didn't go up. It didn't go up at all. He's got an even better matchup this week. I assume he's playing. He has been limited, but I assume since he's practicing, he's going to play. Threw for 319 yards against the Rams. He has that rushing floor that he's shown. It's become pretty clear you can stack him with Slayton. Darren Waller's usage suggests that he has a higher ceiling than what we've seen so far. There are lots of reasons to like this. Eagles defense is a train wreck. I don't know why we just don't play Tyrod Taylor again. I'm going to have Tyrod Taylor lineups again. It just makes too much sense. And I'm very confused by the pricing on him. I don't really understand why he's still down at, what, 5,300, I think is where he is. Why is he still there? It's very weird where he's priced.
I've noticed this year more than in a long time, pricing on DraftKings not making sense and kind of almost being like it was originally without the great values used to get. And what I mean by that is, like, if you look at Patrick Mahomes' salary, it makes no sense. He hasn't put up a good game all year, but he was still one of the most expensive quarterbacks every week. Yeah. Jaylen Waddle being 7,600 week after week after week and not putting up big games. I think the Tyrod situation is kind of the opposite, to where it's Tyrod Taylor, so he's not going to be above 5,300. I mean, we've really needed to see somebody really crush, like CJ Stroud, to change the perception and boost. That's just something I've noticed this year, Ray.
So I think that, and it's been creeping into Showdown too. For a perfect example is that DraftKings has only been caught once this year with a backup quarterback that's been under 8,000 one time. And in the past, that's every single time a backup quarterback was in, they were 6K. And so DraftKings has become way more bullish on their pricing this season, and far less willing to move it. May have a little bit to do with just the field getting kind of sharper and people not willing to jump on quick performances. So DraftKings used to be super reactionary, and now I feel like they're more so letting the field make that assumption. So Tyrod Taylor is a perfect example in that he put up 319 in years past. 10 years ago, maybe you look at that and you say, oh, I have to play Tyrod Taylor. And now Tyrod Taylor's a 16, 17% play. The good thing for us, Raymond, is that he's not going to be, especially since there's so many other backups around his range, but he's easily the safest. And because he has a 5 in front of his number instead of a 4 with our 48 options, he's probably going to be sub 5%. And if you're talking huge field GPPs, honestly, a lot of these guys, there's no one I could put a dollar on except for Tyrod Taylor at 5,300, or you can go, like I said earlier in the show, you can just play your normal good plays on this slate and just enjoy the 5% roster percentage discount because you have so much ownership scattered amongst the backups.
And back to the lead, there you don't need the savings this week, right? You can, I normally, when I do my optimizer, I set the minimum salary at something like $200. I only allow it to leave $200 on the table. Mm-hmm. I might allow it to be $800, $900.
Yes. Yeah.
Or even $1,000. I'll play with it, run it, see what kind of lineups I get. If I decide to even play this week, which I don't always play week 18. It's time to go over to running backs though, and there is some chalk, and we're going to discuss whether these players are good chalk or bad chalk. It's Jordan Mason, Tony Pollard, who somehow has been chalk almost every week this year, which defies logic.
He's chalk. We all want to believe in Tony Pollard so much. We want to believe. We want it to happen. We can't let it go. And this week he gets the Commanders, and we're going to want to happen again, and it's going to be sad again. We can't get away.
Pierre Strong, Zamir White, and speaking of people we just can't get away from, Zeke Elliott showing ownership. Adam, any of those guys you think are good chalk or bad chalk?
Yeah, Zamir White, good chalk. The tough Patriots game for Zeke, especially since his roster percentage is going to be pretty high anyways. I prefer Pierre Strong over Ronnie Rivers, although I know that Ronnie Rivers is great offense, but he's not running behind the offensive line that Kyren Williams has been running behind all season. So it's not really a lot going to translate. And I just don't think Ronnie Rivers has demonstrated much ability. I might have some dynasty bias for Pierre Strong, but I do think that he's talented and he can catch the football. So if we're talking about Jeff Driscoll checkdowns, it's probably going to be Pierre Strong that benefits more than anybody in that situation. So Pierre Strong is somebody that I'd be willing to play, especially since if Ronnie Rivers is going to be chalky and Pierre Strong's the same price, 4K minimum for a running back, then easy pivot over to Pierre Strong.
My almost 20% Pierre Strong in best ball, early best ball. I love Pierre Strong's tape coming out. I was so disappointed that they signed Zeke and didn't give him a real, because the one game they let him play in New England the year before, he looked pretty good. But now you've got two teams that have just stubbornly not given him the shot unless someone was hurt. But I love that for this week. I agree. I mean, there are so many running backs out there. Ray, your thoughts on Jordan Mason. Is Elijah, I didn't read, is Elijah Mitchell also sitting?
So this was an interesting, Rich and I actually had a conversation on Slack, I think it was on Monday, about this 49ers situation after Christian McCaffrey was ruled out. And at that point in time, I think the general consensus was that Elijah Mitchell was going to be very popular and people were going to play him because they thought he was going to, you know, he's the backup and they thought he was going to, you know, be the guy. But then, you know, Elijah Mitchell didn't practice on Wednesday. I think it was with an illness. He's had injury issues throughout the season. And then there was a beat writer report saying that they think they're going to treat Elijah Mitchell, you know, as more of like the starter, not play him much, if at all. And we're going to see a lot of Jordan Mason. Mm-hmm. And so that's where this is coming from. I mean, if it is Jordan Mason, if that's what we end up with, then he's in a good spot and he's getting a lot of work in a running game that we know how effective it can be. But I do still think there's some uncertainty with what this backfield actually is going to look like with Christian McCaffrey out, with Sam Darnold starting, with kind of them resting as many people as they're resting. So there's maybe more uncertainty with Mason than is being, I guess, priced into his roster projections.
That was my thought. So I'm glad that you kind of backed that up. And before we move on to wide receiver, Adam, you wanted to talk about one Aaron Jones.
Yeah, I really like Aaron Jones, more so to go with the theme of the show of just playing Packers this week, because the roster percentage is just going to be so low for them, and they've been super efficient recently. But Aaron Jones has been getting better over the last few weeks since he's come back from injury. A.J. Dillon has become essentially obsolete. So in a game that they have to win, especially a game that I like Jordan Love, and I like to stack my quarterback with a running back that I think can catch a touchdown, just because that's a huge double dip. If you can get it, it's a stack that not a ton of people are going to do. Then I'm super interested in Aaron Jones as part of my Jordan Love stack that I talked about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I'll throw one other low price name out that I like, and that's LaMichael Perrine.
I think that's good.
I think if he's going to be the main guy in Kansas City and he's not going to have any ownership, that's someone who I would like to be over on. Ray, let's move over to wide receiver and your favorite play of the week. I mean, it's a really, really difficult choice, but Christian Kirk at $3,000.
I mean, yeah, he's not even like my favorite play. It's just that we were talking about pricing, and that's the one that stands out to me. Like, how are we here with Kirk? He's eligible to come off IR. It seems like he is. We haven't gotten that, you know, confirmed yet, so we'll have to play that by ear. But I mean, if he comes off IR and he's $3,000 mm-hmm. in a game that the Jaguars need to win, we're going to reach Zach Moss level of rostership mm-hmm. here. And I don't know how you get away from it, because just play him, because especially with Trevor Lawrence, since Trevor Lawrence's ankle injury and now he has a shoulder injury, he's really struggled to push the ball downfield accurately, but he's still been able to be accurate in the short areas. That's why we've seen Evan Ingram have the kind of last month that Evan Ingram has had, at least part of the reason. Kirk, you would expect, okay, he at least when both he and Ridley, you know, were kind of playing together, we're going to see him kind of be used more around the line of scrimmage. You would expect that would be good for him. And so it's a good spot for him. He's only $3,000. I mean, I guess you just play him, but it is one of those, again, like we were talking about pricing, it's one of those weird pricing things where why is this happening? Why didn't we anticipate that maybe Christian Kirk could be coming off IR? It's just very odd.
It is. And the other key things to keep in mind is, because there's so much value everywhere else, both CeeDee Lamb and Justin Jefferson are showing a lot of ownership. Ray, real quickly, you had some high-priced running backs, I think, that you just wanted to throw their names out.
Yeah, I think what Adam's saying about not being afraid of high price and not being just sucked into all the value plays and actually playing good players, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I mean, there are lots of options up there in great situations. Rashad White is in an absolute smash spot. And so why aren't you just going to play him? Kenneth Walker, if he's healthy, if his shoulder's good, is in an absolute smash spot. James Conner is as well. And both of those guys are around other players that are going to be much more popular. And so you have a little bit of leverage on Tony Pollard or Zamir White or something like that. Like, just pay up for the good players if you're able to. If you can play Kirk at 3K, just play the good running backs and, you know, not, maybe not chase it as much. I think that makes a lot of sense this week. And I think what Adam's, that's kind of what Adam's been talking about.
Yeah. And for me, I mean, if Lamb and Jefferson are going to have all this ownership and Mike Evans somehow still has, you know, where Tony, it's like we're in this weird world where Tony Pollard is 20% owned every week and Mike Evans is 6%. And Mike Evans has had just an amazing year. I mean, to me, you know, in a must-have game, Baker Mayfield's the guy that he's looked to all year being 5%. It doesn't make much sense to me, Adam.
Yeah, I don't really understand. I mean, I've had to manually bump Tony Pollard down in the optimizer and shit on all season because you'll get him in the captain spot in like 50% of your lineups, and it just never works. I don't really understand the situation. I guess all the skeptics were correct about Tony Pollard only being productive when he's not in a featured role. I don't really know what's going on there, but Tony Pollard is certainly not worth playing on this slate, especially in a game. I mean, I guess they are 13-point favorites, but it's not really your traditional 13-point favorite where you're going to ride Tony Pollard. It's more like you're going to ride Deuce Vaughn is probably what's going to happen there. So.
Well, Deuce Vaughn on IR.
Rico Dowdle. You're right.
We got Rico Dowdle back. Yeah.
You're my little Deuce Vaughn. You know what I mean. All right. Last question at wide receiver, Ray. Are you buying into DeAndre Hopkins with the incentives?
I'm so torn on this because it's not just the contract incentives. I mean, this is probably Derrick Henry's last game in Tennessee. We'll see if Ryan Tannehill starts. If he does, it's definitely his last game in Tennessee. The Titans definitely want to play spoiler to the Jaguars. And so you have all this motivation, but also the Titans offense is just bad. And so, I mean, if they're just bad, it doesn't matter how hard they're trying. They're just bad. As I said on the other podcast, if I was playing quarterback in the NFL, it doesn't matter how hard I try. I'm still going to be bad. And so I don't know how excited you can get about this, especially if we get Will Levis and he's just going to be up and down. It's very high variance with Hopkins. And maybe you get the good side of it. Maybe you do like that 4-touchdown game he had. This is a good matchup with the Jaguars, but I think it's very high variance here with Hopkins.
Adam, I lied. I do want to pick your brain for some low price wide receivers. One I will throw out is Ronnie Bell of the Niners, who has shown some juice in limited action.
Yeah, I think if I'm looking at it now to see if Juwan Jennings is returning, it looks like he has a chance to. If he does, then probably not super interested in Ronnie Bell. I like Khalif Raymond, somebody who's came through for me quite a bit in showdown. Jameson Williams is going to be out. They're not one-for-one swaps, but you're probably going to get Reynolds playing Jameson Williams' role, and then Khalif Raymond's just going to play in the slot, which he's done all season anyways. Even though he's the fourth wide receiver, he still gets a decent rate, like 50% of the snaps or something like that, just because he has a very niche role. So Khalif Raymond, somebody that's going to pile on receptions. And if you're talking large field GPPs, I mean, you don't really get 4 catches at that price very often. So you could probably get that with Khalif Raymond with Jameson Williams out.
All right, let's move over quickly to tight end before we get out of here. The chalk is McBride, Engram, and Fergie, along with Johnny Munt. You know, if you had put a gun to my head and said there would be a Johnny Munt double-digit ownership week, I probably would be dead at this point. Adam, any of those guys you like more than the other?
Yeah, Evan Engram, definitely. I see Evan Engram at 8% right now. I don't believe Evan Engram at 8%, but 5,400 is way too low for Evan Engram. He's got wide receiver type ceiling at tight end, and his only real competition for that type of ceiling, Trey McBride and I guess Jake Ferguson, but Jake Ferguson's probably going to be more popular at 4,900, and you don't need the $500 worth of savings whatsoever. So the fact that he's sandwiched between Jake Ferguson and Trey McBride is another reason that his roster percentage is probably going to go down, because people are going to either spend the extra money that they don't need to spend, or they're going to spend down on Ferguson to get some extra money. So I really like those players that are sandwiched between two good options when they're also a good option as well. And then it goes well with Christian Kirk at 3K. If he is active, then it probably just has to become lock him in, into every lineup. And if that's the case, and then you also like Evan Ingram, Calvin Ridley is also a pretty good play, then you start liking Trevor Lawrence, and now you're just rolling a ton of Jag stacks out there, and that's your best way to gain leverage over 100% Christian Kirk, because so many people are going to play Christian Kirk at 3K because you have to. The only thing you could do is double dip with them and then add in Evan Ingram and assume that you get a full Jags onslaught sort of performance.
All right, two other names we're going to get out of here at the tight end position with some ownership, Gerald Everett and Noah Gray, Ray.
Yeah, Noah Gray, I mean, that we're playing. Noah Gray has actually looked good. And so that is one of the interesting ones of, you know, we're just playing because we don't think Travis Kelce is going to play much, if at all. So, you know, that play is what it is. I just lost the other person you said to me, but I had thoughts about them.
Gerald Everett.
So the thing about Gerald Everett has been, you know, Keenan Allen's not going to play this week. Josh Palmer, will see what happens. And so you're going to expect Gerald Everett to get a lot of targets. But my question just continues to be with Everett, if you're trying to play him, what is the upside? Like, what are we going to get out of this? Maybe we get a touchdown. And if you get a touchdown, there's a chance you can get kind of like a tight end five performance on this slate. But like, that's where we are with Gerald Everett. He just has not shown the kind of upside that Everett has, that McBride has, that even Ferguson has, although I don't like him this week in this matchup, that like you've seen upside from those guys. You haven't really seen it from Everett. And so if he's going to be popular, that's pretty simple for me to just kind of walk away from.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, Darren Waller, him showing less than 1% ownership. Mm-hmm. I, back to your Adam's point earlier, go for talented guys. Don't just play a team full of backups. That's going to do it for us for this week. We really appreciate you joining us. We thank Ray for sitting in for Ryan. It's good to have Adam as part of the team from here on out. Adam, I'm very much looking forward to going game by game with you on DFS during the playoffs and picking apart Ryan's props with a fine-tooth comb. I will again be with Curtis on Monday, and I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. Happy New Year to everyone who listened, and we will see you next week.